Simeon Tagle, welcome to CKUT Radio. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
You are the Director of Communications for Amazon Watch. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And currently there is a trial going on between the people of Ecuador, or a group of people in Ecuador, and Chevron. Can you just do me a favor and tell my listeners when this situation got started, what happened, and what is the current situation going on right now?
Sure. Chevron, or more specifically Texaco, which is now part of the Chevron Corporation, operated in the Ecuadorian Amazon from the mid-1960s to the early 1990s, drilling for oil. At the time, the technology that they used, it was basically not the most modern and up-to-date technology. And when you drill for oil, typically you also get a toxic byproduct. It's a sort of toxic gunk called formation waters. This formation waters has all kinds of carcinogens and other sort of toxins in it, such as cadmium and lead. It's also typically about 2% crude oil. The law in the U.S. And in other countries, I think, for many years before Texaco arrived in Ecuador, was that you had to re-inject these formation waters back deep into the underground. However, Texaco, to save money, about $2 or $3 in costs per barrel of produced crude oil, decided not to re-inject, but to dump the oil, the formation water, directly into the Amazon rainforest, into streams, rivers, and unlined pits. Over the period that they were there, they dumped a total of 18 billion gallons of formation waters. And just to give you an idea of the scale of that, if you extrapolate 2% of that 18 billion gallons was crude oil, you get a figure that is approximately 30 times greater the amount of crude spilled in the Exxon Valdez spill. They stopped drilling in the early 1990s, but they left an awful lot, an incredible amount of toxic pollution in this inhabited part of the Amazon rainforest. And there is now a class action lawsuit with 30,000 plaintiffs going on down in Ecuador, and the plaintiffs are suing Chevron. And their principal demand is that Chevron fund a full environmental remediation. At the moment, there's been a very provisional and preliminary estimate that that would cost $6 billion. Possibly that could go up, that estimate, depending on what other experts for the plaintiffs say. But that's the principal demand of the plaintiffs, along also with medical care for people who are now suffering from all kinds of health conditions, including cancer, and also for potable water, because we're talking about an area, a remote area of a developing nation where people rely on local streams, for example, and rivers for their drinking water, all their water needs. They don't have tap water. And so it is really a pretty urgent situation for them that they are provided potable water as well.
Can we just speak a little bit about what actually they have suffered? There have been, I believe I read that one, at least one indigenous group has been completely eliminated. Is that correct?
That's correct. The Tetete, they're known as. I mean, there were probably a range of factors in their disappearance, but I think that Texaco's presence in the region and also Texaco's practices regarding sort of the dumping definitely was a significant factor in the disappearance of the Tetete. There are several other indigenous groups as well whose numbers have just really dwindled since Texaco arrived in the area. Plus, there are also many thousands of non-indigenous but impoverished residents of the area who are also suffering very badly as a result of Texaco's dumping.
Now, Texaco has said that they have gone in and made everything healthy again, but tests seem to prove differently. What have you found up to now is regarding some of these sites? I believe that there have been press releases that said there's up to 300 times the amount of allowable toxicity still in the ground. Is that correct?
Yes, that's an interesting point. Texaco reached a deal with the Ecuadorian government in the 1990s to carry out a remediation. The remediation cost, I think it was $40 million. However, that remediation is now the subject of much controversy in Ecuador and also a fraud investigation by the Ecuadorian authorities. And it is alleged that Texaco, rather than genuinely remediate, what they simply did was use bulldozers to cover up large pits containing formation waters and other pollution rather than remove the pollution. And so the trial now, this class action lawsuit in Ecuador, a large part of the trial has involved the court, so the judge, the lawyers for both sides, the plaintiffs and Chevron, visiting dozens of field sites in the Ecuadorian Amazon where scientists for both sides take samples, analyze them, and submit them to the court. And the results of that analysis are really pretty staggering. The plaintiffs argue that Chevron Texaco, should and would lose this case even based on its own samples, even if the plaintiff's samples weren't submitted to the court. And I've got some statistics here. They're not the most up-to-date. They're from December of last year. But just to give you an example, Chevron, of 135 water samples that Chevron took and submitted to the court, 132, so that's all but three, 132 of 135 water samples were in violation of Ecuadorian law. Also, 240 of Chevron's 512 soil samples were in violation of Ecuadorian law. I should also add that Ecuadorian law, as compared to U.S. law, I don't quite know what the situation is with Canadian law, but Ecuadorian law, as compared to U.S. law, is relatively lax. So when you're in violation of Ecuadorian law, you're seriously in violation of U.S. Standards.
Well, and compared to, say, laws in California, where Chevron is located, levels are much higher than would be allowed in say California. Is that correct?
Yes, we're talking about orders of magnitude. I mean, there's been one soil sample that was submitted to the court that was 900,000 parts per million of I think it is total petroleum hydrocarbons. I need to get the science right. I need to check on that. But basically, that you're talking about a lump of that is 90% crude oil or tar that was submitted to the court. So that's clearly, and you're talking about standards that typically allow for, a much lower level than that, you know, really just a tiny, tiny fraction of a percentage. So that just gives you an idea of kind of level of pollution that there is down there.
Do you have any support in Washington from congressmen or senators that want to see this case resolved and see the people of Ecuador taken care of, or do you see an opposite reaction?
We have had some support. For example, there's been lobbying going on behind the scenes in D.C. by Chevron. Basically, they've been trying to pressure the U.S. government to, in turn, pressure the Ecuadorian government to close down the case. A response to that came in the form of a letter from two U.S. senators, Patrick Leahy and Barack Obama, to the U.S. trade representative, urging him not to use this court case as a bargaining chip in trade negotiations with Ecuador. I should also say that a free and independent judiciary is just a hallmark and a fundamental element of any democracy, and any threat to the integrity and independence of a judicial process is also a threat to democracy. And so we feel that Chevron's lobbying in this case has actually undermined or sought to undermine Ecuadorian democracy.
And where does the court case stand right now, or what is the next step involving Chevron and the people of Ecuador?
Well, after many long years, the end may now be in sight. There were many more, I think it was something like 64 more field inspections were scheduled, but the court recently agreed to a motion from the plaintiffs that those field inspections were unnecessary given the overwhelming evidence that had already been established by the field inspections that had already taken place. The court would just have been hearing more and more of the same. Chevron Texaco wanted all those field inspections to go ahead. It's part of their delaying tactics because we believe they aren't able to debate with us or argue with us on the substance of the allegations. So The court agreed that those field inspections no longer needed to happen, so we're now in the very final phase of the field inspections that have been scheduled to take place, and we anticipate that then there'll be a lull in the court case, and then there should be a decision from the court, we hope, sometime in 2007.
And very quickly before we go, the actual state of the rainforest itself, how has Chevron left this ecosystem down there in Ecuador? Can it be reversed? Can it be saved at this point?
That's an interesting question. When you go down there, the pollution isn't always visible, at least not to an untrained eye. It looks like rainforest, but when you start digging, you will find the contamination. What the effects have been on the rainforest, the long-term effect, is something that really needs to be studied much more in depth. Whether the rainforest can ever fully recover is also something that, frankly, I don't think we really know right now. The one other thing I'd add is that estimate of $6 billion for the cost of cleanup, and we're talking about an area of about 1,000 square miles, that estimate doesn't actually include cleaning up the last 10 or 20% of the contamination, which, frankly, is just too complicated. It's not going to be possible or viable to clean that up. So even with that remediation, a multi-billion-dollar remediation, there will still be a very substantial amount of contamination left in the rainforest.
All right. Simeon Tegel, Director of Communications with Amazon Watch, I thank you for joining CKUT today.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck on your process.
Thank you. Goodbye. Bye-bye.